from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. We're about to get a really fascinating update for you here on the program. And first off, I want to remind you that this show is brought to you in large part by the Sunshine Simple Solar Generator, sunshinesimple.com. This is the world's most powerful solar generator for the home for the best price. It was created by myself and my team because I couldn't find a generator that I was happy with that was solar. And now we have the brand new Sunshine Simple Junior. If you want to see what the Sunshine Simple Junior looks like, go to sunshinesimple.com. And it weighs half as much as the main unit, and it produces about 400 watts. So this is perfect for, say, camping and that sort of thing, or if you want just some very basic backup for, let's say, keeping your phone charged, running computers, radio equipment, that sort of thing. So go, again, watch the demonstration video and take a look at all that at sunshinesimple.com. Now, of course, we are broadcasting from Asheville, North Carolina, heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains here. And the most famous author from Asheville was Thomas Wolfe. He lived from 1900 to, I believe, 1939. And he's best known for his then-controversial novel called Look Homeward, Angel. Now, Thomas Wolfe, you know, he's one of my favorite authors for a number of reasons. I mean, he just had this incredible knack for explaining these almost subliminal concepts in a beautiful literary fashion. And we talk about him a lot, or to some extent, on our Haunted Asheville Ghost Tours, because Look Homeward, Angel actually ends with Thomas Wolfe's alter ego, Eugene Gant, encountering the full-bodied apparition of his dead brother, Ben. And it's a very strange, surreal scene. And it almost makes you think it happened to Wolfe because of the confusion with which he describes encountering his brother and talking to this spirit. Now, we don't know, of course, if it was meant literally or figuratively, but there is definitely a ghostly spiritual connection there to Thomas Wolfe's writing. And, of course, hauntedasheville.com gives you more information if you're interested in learning more about that tour and why we talk about him. But as I mentioned earlier, you know, we have this big bash, this big party in Asheville every year called Bell Share. It happens in July. And our upcoming Bell Share celebration is going to mark the 14th anniversary of a tragic night when someone in the midst of this party went to Thomas Wolfe's house, the house that he grew up in here in Asheville, and lit it on fire and almost destroyed it. It was a terrible fire. There has been an enormous amount of effort put into rebuilding the house. It's been expensive and laborious, and, you know, when I'd heard that the house had been burned, I was sickened to hear it. And it's amazing to think that 14 years later, that is still an unsolved case. Nobody knows who burned it down, but it's clear that this was arson. So it almost seems like after 14 years, it's a cold case. Maybe we'll never know. But a friend of mine, a researcher, a writer, a newsman named James McKenzie, he was not satisfied with that. He has decided to start working with authorities and creating this sort of community outreach to refresh people's minds about this event and try to get some leads so we might finally find out who is responsible for this and bring them to justice. And so This is something that I thought was personally a wonderful idea. And so James has been kind enough to take some time to tell us what's going on here on the program. So James McKenzie, welcome, sir, to Speaking of Strange.
Joshua, my pleasure. It is great to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, you're a great writer, James. You know, you and I share a lot in common because I know you like to get out and look at legends and history and ghost stories. You've published that sort of thing. So I'm sure that, you know, this whole situation with the Thomas Wolfe House, it affected you just as deeply as me or anybody else.
It is a heinous crime of a what I fear that we are becoming a post-literate society, forgetting our authors and forgetting the importance of reading big books with big ideas in a Twitter generation. So yes, I was saddened. Again, I was still like in my late teens, early 20s when this happened. But it still saddens me to this day. It caused about $2.4 million worth of damage to the home. It was closed down about 6 years. And to this day, 14 years later, there's still no one that's ever been caught and prosecuted for the crime.
Now, James, how much do we know about what happened that night?
It was July 24th, 1998, around 2 a.m. It was the night before Belshare kicked off on a Friday morning. Belshare is the big street festival we do here every year in the city of Asheville. Music, move, you know, food, beer, party, whatever. And it was even bigger in the 90s. But about 2 a.m., someone threw an incendiary device through the boarding houses. It's the home that Thomas Wolfe grew up in, like a kitchen, like a little breakfast nook, and caused about 20% fire damage to the home. Literally every room in the house was damaged by fire, water, smoke. There's a lot of damage to the whole home, and it was closed down for years.
And so what have the authorities concluded since then about, you know, who might be responsible? Any leads at all?
I think that they had their suspects. I've been researching this for the last year. Found a lot of newspaper articles that they had suspects, but in a case like the arson is really fascinating. I've been investigating this for about the last year. And when I started looking into arson as a crime and arsonists as people, it got really fascinating. I think that this crime is probably a type of arsonist that is angry at the world, lashing out. So there literally is no motive in this crime. And the State Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, the Thomas Wolfe home is a state historic landmark. So it was investigated by the state. They couldn't prove motive. And I think that pretty much makes it, that's one of the things you have to prove in successfully prosecuting a case, is motive.
And it makes it far more complicated that it happened on Belshare weekend when hundreds of thousands of people are coming into Asheville. So, I mean, is there any sense as to whether or not this was a local or probably somebody who just came into town who has no solid connection?
There were a lot of theories. I looked at the Buncombe County, that's the county that houses Asheville, the arson statistics for the 1990s. And it ticks along. In 95, it had an uptick, and then in 1998, when the Thomas Wolfe home was set ablaze, there's another uptick. So we had a string of arsons that year, especially that summer, in town. But I say there were a lot of theories floated. Again, Belshare, the nature of that festival, the population of the city is, what, doubled or tripled? There's not an empty hotel room or seat or, sofa in the entire city for the whole weekend. So literally there are a lot of people in the town. It attracts a lot of, you know, passers through that maybe are sleeping in alleys or what. So there are a lot of theories floated. I think that the investigators had some suspects, but again, they may or may not have been the ones who did it.
So at this point, what can we do? What is our best bet to try to solve this crime?
Okay, so I have been, I called the State Bureau of Investigation over this last year, and they told me the case is not closed, but it's not being actively investigated, because I wanted them to just re-solicit for information. And they told me that the umbrage to do that would have to come from like a local, level, a community, the public, the media, and local investigators. I have also been in touch with our local arson task force here. They say the best thing to do if anyone wants to come forward, if someone's brother told them 10 years ago, you know, I need to tell you this, and maybe they died 2 years ago. There's a lot of reasons why someone would want to talk about this now. But the best thing to do is call Crime Stoppers. It's 828-255-5050. So 255-5050. And I haven't confirmed the amount of money. There's a lot of talk back in the late 90s. There was a lot of money put up by the state and local and a lot of private donors, but I don't want to mention the amount because I haven't actually confirmed it. Maybe that's just the journalist in me. But there is a tasty amount of money still out there available for people whose tip leads to the arrest and prosecution of the guilty parties.
So, of course, right now, times are tough, and if there's somebody listening out there who, you know, maybe you knew something about this, and at the time you didn't want to be involved, there's a chance now you can maybe get some reward money, pay your bills. Crime Stoppers, again, 828-255-5050. So is the best thing that we can do, James, is talk about this and just remind people and continue raising the awareness that this is still an open case?
Correct. Now, again, only 10 or 15% of arsons nationwide are ever solved. It's just due to the nature of the crime, because all of the clues, the fingerprints, whatever, ends up burning to ashes. So only a small amount of these crimes are ever solved anyway. But there's a lot of people who forgot that this was an arson. There's a lot of people who I've talked to that's like, they said, oh, they caught those people, didn't they? No, they did not. There's a lot of people currently moving to Asheville that don't know about Thomas Wolfe or the arson. So I thought, with nothing else, that at least the people at the memorial, they were behind me, they backed me, and they said, you know, if this puts it out there in front of the public again, if it gets re-interest going in the community, this is all good. Are we going to solve the arson? I don't know. I'd like to see it solved, surely. But statistically, the odds are against it. But who knows? There might be someone out there that after 14 years wants to say, you know what? It's time to come forward and tell the truth.
Okay,
what I'm hoping for.
Well, we have 30 seconds till our break. Tell us quickly, what's your email address if somebody wants to contact you?
The best way, I have a Facebook page. It's called Asheville's Literary Mystery, the Thomas Wolfe Home Arson. Join that group. I'm going to be updating it, keeping info and posts going. That's the best way to stay in touch with me about this, regarding this issue.
James, thanks so much for what you're doing. I really appreciate it, and we'll keep everybody updated. When we come back from this break, we have an update for you on this bizarre object that was recently discovered in the Baltic Sea. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Program that explores the summit of humankind's enlightenment, the pit of our depravity, both ends of the spectrum. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, coming at you from Asheville, North Carolina, land of the sky, but heard around the world, and we thank you for spending your evening with us. Once again, Crime Stoppers number, if you know something, hey, get a reward. That's how it works. You can do it anonymously, 828-255-5050. If you know anything about the Thomas Wolfe House arson, 828-255-5050. We're trying to stay updated here on all the weird, crazy news that's just exploding around the world. And, you know, I can tell you as a certified scuba diver, as an avid snorkeler, and a guy who just enjoys being in the water, there are some very weird formations on the bottom of the ocean. And so when once in a while a story comes out about some strange object that has been discovered on the bottom of the ocean, I don't jump to conclusions. I don't automatically say, a UFO has been found on the bottom of the sea just because something kind of appears similar to a spaceship. Water and all the crazy geologic forces can produce some amazingly well-designed things over time. However, you may have heard that an object, for lack of a better word, was discovered on the bottom of the Baltic Sea last year. It was discovered, and in fact, specifically June 19th of 2011, about 300 feet below the surface. Now, the Baltic Sea is in northern Europe. It borders a lot of different countries. And some divers found what looked like a large, weirdo, disc-shaped object underneath, right underneath the silt layer. You've heard about this, Shelley, right? I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Forrest, I'm sure you've heard about it.
Time or two.
And so, you know, at first, again, didn't take it that seriously. I heard a follow-up that they continued going down there, and they said, well, it looks like it's made of rock. Okay, so I figured, end of story. Looks like it's made of rock. It's just one of these strange rock formations. Especially you, Forrest, with your background in geology, you know what I'm talking about, how rocks can look like all kinds of weird things.
I mean, currents can shape them. Wind can shape them.
Yeah.
Water can shape them if it's under the ocean.
But this story has some additional chapters now. Huffington Post and Truthfall.com are posting updates on this because divers are continuing to go down there, and they're claiming that, hey, it looks like rock, but they're not sure if it's rock. There are some weird things happening around this object as they're doing their research. I have a bulletin list of some of the features here. It has a completely circular, plate-like exterior. It's 180 meters in circumference. So a meter is roughly around 3 feet. So if we just round that up to 200, we can say about 600 feet in circumference. That's pretty darn huge. Let's see. They say it's 200 feet across... object is 200 feet across, mushroom-shaped, comprising a thick pillar, rising out of the seabed with a 4-meter-thick dome on top. It's kind of weird how this is written, because they're switching between feet and meters here. But anyway, they say it has kind of a mushroom shape, which I guess if we were to start thinking from the UFO mindset, it's like the flying saucer with a little compartment on the bottom that they beam you up through. They say that there are cavity-like corridors inside the object. That's pretty odd. And it has straight and smooth walls in certain areas with a lot of right angles. There are visible formations on top of the object which look like passageways or walls, as well as something that looks like it could be a staircase. Stone circles like, quote, fireplaces of hard black quote, almost petrified, burnt-looking stone arranged around the top of the dome. And apparently, now I don't know if this is true or not, but there are reports about electromagnetic anomalies that are occurring around this thing. They're having equipment failures and, you know, just a lot of electronic problems. So I'm still, you know, the jury's still out on whether or not this is just some really cool, interesting geologic ocean formation, or if it might actually be the remnants of some craft that's been sitting down there for thousands or millions of years and has now taken on a rocky appearance. I mean, I guess that's possible. So I don't know what to think about it at this point. I certainly have not come close to the Baltic Sea diving down 300 feet, but just in case it turns out to be something, you've been updated. That, you know, wouldn't this be crazy if everybody's waiting in 2012 to see if there's some evidence of contact, and it turns out, sure enough, this thing fires back up, and all the rocky exterior kind of breaks off, and it shoots out of the ocean. That'd be cool, huh?
Yes, it would.
But, you know, the UFO thing just won't go away. I have people who ask me all the time, like, why is the paranormal so popular? And I tell them, well, the paranormal has always been popular. I mean, that's what religions are based upon, the idea of spiritual realms and miracles and weird things. But we've now reached the point with the Internet where people can exchange information, they can post their data, they have cell phones with cameras on them, we have hundreds of channels on TV. I mean, it might look like it's more popular. It's just more visible now because media is more accessible to individuals than it has ever been before. And there is a show that recently debuted here, I think it was last night, on Nat Geo called Chasing UFOs. Now, I have not seen this program. But, and in fact, pretty soon we're thinking about starting up a new segment here on the show to just kind of keep everybody updated on sort of pop culture references to what's happening in other media out there. But as part of their push to publicize this new program, the National Geographic Channel has spearheaded something pretty creative regarding the WOW signal. Now, if you don't remember what this is, in 1977, SETI was measuring all of these sort of seemingly random radio signals that were coming in from all over the universe. That's what they do. And there was one point where all of a sudden it looked like for, I think it might have been just a matter of seconds or minutes, there was this organized signal that came in. And the researcher at SETI who was watching this was so impressed that he just wrote "Wow" down next to it. You know, he was overwhelmed. But then it was gone, and they've never been able to locate it again. Nonetheless, the area of the sky from which it emanated is recorded, and so Nat Geo is they're doing this little project here where they are going to broadcast a message back into the sky in the direction from which that signal came. And they are asking the general public to be involved with that message by using Twitter. So basically they have a Twitter account, and my understanding is that anybody can go there and write a message, and I'm sure they probably won't allow profanity or something like that, but you write a message, and if they think it's appropriate, then they are going to incorporate that message into the signal that they beam back. But I think tonight at some point is the deadline. So it may have already passed. I'm not sure. But if you want to get an update, go to Twitter and do hashtag ChasingUFOs. And, of course, all this is being rolled into a single message. But you have to ask yourself, do we want to open up that communication? We have physicists like Stephen Hawking who are saying, look, anytime a more advanced species has encountered a lesser advanced species. It hasn't turned out that well for the lesser advanced species. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let me tell you, speaking of UFOs, why that a farmer in Canada is complaining to his government about UFOs. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's Speaking of Strange. Yeah, during the break, Forrest made a good point. I hope they really do carefully edit the signal they're sending back to the aliens. It just takes that one douchebag to start an intergalactic war, Forrest.
It does. And, you know, with our luck, and whoever else's luck, they will translate that one signal,
yeah,
that one tweet,
yeah,
from that one guy, one girl, that says, you know, your aliens, your parents were never married, or something like that. Something that would just really just...
Your mama's so fat.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Your mama's eyes is so big. Your mama is so gray.
We have to start a whole new line of alien yo mama jokes now. Can you think of one, Shelly?
Your mama's so reptilian. She needs lotion.
Oh man, yeah, that it would be, well, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about with the Henry Stimson story. You just never know. One little thing can start that chain reaction to create mass devastation. The earth is vaporized because they put some 14-year-old's crappy comment into their little signal that they blast back into the universe. Surely there must be some protocol, some editing for what's going to happen there. We know it has to be 140 characters or less, at least. So anyway, and also, do you remember like in the 70s when a bunch of scientists and astronomers and philosophers, they got together and they created some golden records, Shelley, and they,
mm-hmm,
they sent them on a craft,
Voyager,
into the universe.
Yep.
And they spent all this time. I mean, they got a think tank of the greatest minds on the planet together to come up with these different codes and diagrams and poems and equations and things to give them the highest chances of communicating, to make that first, you know, dignified contact. And now, in the year 2012, yeah, some 12-year-old just writes some crap on Twitter, and boom, there we go. It's sent off. I don't know if I like that.
I don't like it.
Quality control is not there to represent humanity. Well, this is Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. If you like this program, and you, if you're tuning in, if you're listening, let me tell you, think of how many people are listening. And if you have a business that you want to promote, advertise, go to speakingofstrange.com and email us. We'll let you know if we can maybe help you out with that. So we're talking a little bit about aliens here. And I mentioned that I have this story from Eastern New Brunswick, Canada. Over the past 10 years, a farmer there has lost at least 250 cows. Now, the government there in Canada is charging this guy, saying that he has failed to care for them properly, that he didn't feed them right. But the farmer is saying BS. He's saying, I've been telling you guys for 10 years, it's aliens. He has posted YouTube videos showing how his cows are being affected over the years, sunken features and hair loss. He is declaring that his cows have been the victims of, quote, death rays, some form of alien weapon that is in fact being covered up by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Quote, at least 250 head of cattle have died from what we call a death beam, end quote, he said on camera. He also said, quote, where the atmospheric air is manipulated into a death beam focused on the noses of the animals, end quote. So he believes the animals breathe in the death beam and then they slowly die. So, you know, of course the Canadian authorities are saying, oh, this is a bunch of nonsense. This guy's just not giving his cows adequate medical attention. There's a trial situation right now underway. Veterinarians have been subpoenaed. Officers are there testifying and on both sides. But, you know, this guy is apparently hoping that this will bring to light a real, tangible, physical problem. He says here that he wants to call officers to testify for him who have made comments about, you know, aliens flying in the airspace over his farm. So who knows how this is going to turn out, but it's always interesting when, I mean, if you think about the idea that there actually may be beings zipping around out there that are messing with us, just like the messing with Sasquatch Jack Lynx deal. If there are aliens that are messing with us, eventually that is going to come down to practical physical impacts on people's lives that will end up in legal battles. And who knows, maybe out of this, some evidence will be forced forth. And it could be something as simple as that that finally discloses what's happening with all this alien business. You know, do you think that UFOs would beam up cows, Shelley?
I don't know why they always have to pick on the cows, but they do, don't they?
Well, you know, you've heard me say this before. It's unfortunate, but it may be that aliens are these super advanced beings that for all their millions of years of evolutionary development have finally condensed all the properties of science down into one singular device, the ultimate measuring tool that will give you whatever information you want about any characteristic of any biological organism in the entire universe. It is a masterful, sophisticated item of grand, enlightened scientific inquiry. The only problem is it has to go up the behind. Bop. That's the bad news. Got to stick it right back. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
It has to go. An ear won't work. They can't stick it under your tongue. It's got to go back there. And I would call that a design flaw, personally. Now, I know that that may not be a big deal if you're the person administering it, but if we're on the receiving end of things here, maybe if I have my opportunity to go and tweet back to the aliens, maybe my message should be, guys, can we put it under the tongue? That would solve so many problems. Can we just work a little, can we engineer just a little bit more? Maybe it's going to take another million years of evolution before, you know, they figure out how to stick it somewhere else. Somewhere else? I guess, well, we have devices that, you know, you can just shoot, you can shoot a beam and you can get a lot of information, right? Why do they have to stick a probe in us from behind like that? Do they just relish it? Do they just enjoy it? Do you remember what Dr. Y said? They have a fascination with holes. Maybe it's the whole black hole, wormhole mentality going on there. I don't know what the answer to this question is. But we need, if we're going to have a public relations outreach, I say we start there. There's new information from space.com about Mars. They say that right now there's evidence that the interior of Mars holds vast reservoirs of water, with some spots apparently as wet as Earth's innards. Now, this is, it's still a little controversial. They say that it's scanty evidence. But you always hear that there's a connection between water and life as we know it. Liquid water is what we're possibly talking about here. Liquid water that may still be inside Mars. It'd be funny if they were just Martians after all. Look, little Marvin the Martian. Maybe they're coming from that close by. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I have a story here from the UK. Prozac for dogs, okay? And then there's one from Miami, and it's called, If You Can't Beat Them, Eat Them. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. We'll be back after these important messages. Minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. Coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. And that's when we dig into some of the most controversial, outrageous, and yes, often offensive news not for the kiddies, not for the sensitive and easily offended. Dark 30. And of course, we have the holiday on the way, 4th of July, Independence Day, and we're going to take a little break. We're going to regroup, enjoy ourselves. As far as I know, we'll probably have a best of for you next week. I know all of you who listen to the show regularly, you're like, oh, best ofs, gosh, we did best ofs for months. But hey, we're only human. It's 2012. We're overwhelmed here. We have to take a break once in a while and go out there in the field. Gather stuff, have experiences. One of the things that makes this show special, as I say at the beginning of the show, is that we don't just sit in a radio studio every day. We go out, we live our lives, we have experiences. That's what enriches what we talk about on the program. The consequence is, you got to wait sometimes a little bit for us to come back and be like, okay, we're ready to tell you what's going on now, especially this year. From the UK, where I recently was, Shelley, you flew through the UK, through Heathrow.
I saw a lot of the airport.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the thing that sucks. It's like if you go through an airport somewhere, you never know if you should say, I've been to this place or not. I mean, it's kind of a stretch. You can say, oh, I've been somewhere just because you've flown through the airport, but you really haven't quite experienced that place. Anyway, UK, up to, this is from the Sun in the UK, up to 80%, they say, of their 8 million mutts would benefit from products similar to human antidepressants. Traditional behavior by dogs such as barking at strangers, cowering from fireworks, or howling when left alone, is now being reinterpreted. These were previously assumed to be natural reactions, but now they're being diagnosed as hyperactivity and phobic behavior and separation anxiety. Other conditions assessed by vets include sleeping problems, anorexia? Dogs are anorexic? Oh, my gosh. This is horrible. Self-mutilation, stress, and depression. They say the most common dog issue was hyperactivity, with 60% of pets exhibiting this behavior frequently, sometimes, or all the time. Researchers show 30% of dogs have fears or phobias, while 22.5% have obsessive-compulsive disorders, such as excessive paw-licking or tail-chasing. 12% exhibit separation-related problems, blah, blah. So right now, there's a drug called Reconcile, but from Eli Lilly, from what I understand here, and they're trying to produce Prozac for dogs.
Is that really a good idea? I mean, really, do you want your dog not to bark at strangers and just let them into your house? Oh, please, come in. You know, rob my owner.
Just buy a stuffed dog, right?
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a children's book called The Lonely Amoeba.
Yes, it's very sad.
And it's about a little amoeba named the emo amoeba. This is before the emo movement started, by the way.
Yes.
I think they ripped me off. Emo amoeba, he goes off and he has an adventure, and there's like Larry the Hairy Paramecium. He's the bad guy. No, I'm sorry. He's a good guy, but the bad guys, the Hydras attack, and point being here, personify, anthropomorphize animals. We want to look at them as humans in human terms, but they're not.
No.
They're not. If you start falling into that illusion that your pet is like a human, then they'll do something pretty soon afterward to remind you, like, no, this pet doesn't get it. So I don't know. I think we are looking too much at animals the way we view ourselves as humans.
Well, look at the gorilla. Well, the monkey, right? That ate the friend's face.
Yeah, well, that was a chimpanzee.
It was a chimpanzee.
Yeah. An ape. Yeah.
When the owner slept with the little chimpanzee and treated it like a child and bathed it, and it's an animal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. And then here's this story before we take our break from Miami, Florida. Three of the top chefs say if you can't beat them, eat them. They're having problems down there in Florida with pythons, wild boars, and lionfish. No natural predators. So a bunch of these chefs have gotten together, figured out how to cook them up, make them delicious, and they're having a big feast to show people how good it is to eat pythons, wild boars, and lionfish. And they say if they don't have a natural predator, it's time for humans to fit that role. Going to take a break. When we come back, the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.